All right, thank you. We'll have Marshall call the court to session.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Frisch, Chief Judge Siegel, Judge Reyes, the Honorable Jennifer L. Frisch presiding.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is December 9, 2021. We have four cases on our calendar this morning. We're here on our first case, A21-0881, in the matter of Natasia Moose. I'm sorry if I mispronounced her name. Please correct me if I didn't get that right. Counsel, just a few housekeeping notes. Please mute your microphone if you are not speaking. Marshall will be showing a running clock of your time. You will each have 15 minutes for your primary argument. The appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use that. I'd ask that you identify yourself and your client before you begin speaking. And with that, counsel, you may begin.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Megan Seavey, and I represent the appellant in this case, Natasia Moose. Also in the room with me is my co-counsel, Peter Knapp. The issue in this case is whether Ms. Moose substantially complied with the appeal deadline. Ms. Moose asked this court to reverse Deed's determination and find substantial compliance in this case and order a hearing on the merits. Most of Ms. Moose's dealings with Deed have been through her web account, which was assigned by Deed. Ms. Moose has consistently used this web account to update her employment and stay up to date on decisions and determinations. In this case, Deed argues that Ms. Moose did not substantially comply with the appeal deadline. In the case In re Merak, this court held that a person has substantially complied with the appeal deadline if they have a reasonable explanation for failing to strictly comply, has taken steps to comply with the statute, has generally complied with the statute's purpose, and there is reasonable notice and a lack of prejudice to the parties. Here, Ms. Moose has a reasonable explanation for failing to strictly comply. She did not receive the February amended determination in the mail or in her web account.
Ms. Seavey, so I appreciate that argument. What I did not see in the record is any evidence as to when Ms. Moose actually did receive the determination from Deed. Is that in the record somewhere?
It is not, Your Honor. The record here is very limited.
So then my question is how are we are not a fact-finding court, but how are we in a position to determine whether she acted reasonably if we don't know when she got the determination and how quickly she acted after she got the determination? I mean, for example, maybe she didn't get the determination on the day that Deed says it was mailed, but maybe she got it 5 days later, and that's still within, and then waited until filing her challenge to the determination. I'm just not seeing how we can make a conclusion that she acted reasonably if we don't know when she actually got the determination.
Yes, Your Honor, we're not sure. You know, as far as we know, she never received the determination. Deed also has offered no explanation as to either why she didn't receive it or actual confirmation that it was sent to her.
But she did. You say that she didn't get notice of the determination or she didn't get the determination, but she knew that she was denied benefits. So at some point she knew. I'm just trying to find out when she knew so that I can figure out whether she acted reasonably after she got information about the determination. No, nothing in the record.
Nothing in the record. She did, as soon as she did become aware of the February amended determination, she did appeal it. I believe it was only within a few weeks that she did appeal the February determination.
And where is that in the record?
Uh, She did appeal the February determination. I believe it was 22 days late.
Okay. Go ahead.
In the actually, case,
if I may, I'd like to follow up on that question, because so deed states that it mailed that determination on February 16th, and she filed an appeal on March 30th, correct?
Yes.
So we do know that in the record. So she found out at some time before March 30th of the deed's determination. But you said that she responded soon after she found out. What is the basis of when she found that out then?
She eventually did decide to appeal the initial determination because her benefits had been drastically reduced. And it was at that time that she found out about the February determination.
Thank you.
Was it, but it seems like it had been reduced earlier, but she just didn't realize it. I mean, I don't know how much delay there is back and forth and seeing what's in your bank account, but I thought the reduction had gone in prior based on the prior determination in January. Is that accurate, or am I misstating the record?
I believe so.
Okay. And then I've got, oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Your Honor, please.
Oh, okay. Then I've got another question. So we've got the evidence from the department that they mailed it, and it appears that the ULJ judge made a finding that it was mailed. And so what do we do with that finding? Can we just presume then that it actually was mailed and that it's somehow or another your client's fault for not? I mean, can we just act on that, that she didn't have actual notice perhaps, but the department did everything it did? Okay, here's my question. In terms of standard of review then, do we have to find that, is that a finding of fact by the ULJ judge? And then if there's evidence in the record to support that, does that end our inquiry?
Your Honor, I would say that this is a legal question here. And the issue is whether Ms. Moos substantially complied with the appeal deadline. Substantial compliance in In Re Merak, this court held that a person has substantially complied with the appeal deadline if they have a reasonable explanation for failing to strictly comply, has taken steps to comply with the statute, has generally complied with the statute's purpose, and there is reasonable notice and lack of prejudice to the parties. Here, Ms. Moos has a reasonable explanation for failing to strictly comply. She didn't receive the February amended determination. Furthermore, it didn't appear in Ms. Moos's web account, which deed has not offered an explanation as to why it didn't appear in her web account. Ms. Moos has taken steps to comply with the statute. She did appeal the February determination when she became aware of it. And furthermore, Ms. Moos received another amended determination in April, and she did timely appeal that decision. Also here, there would be no prejudice if Ms. Moos was granted a hearing on the merits. There is no employer in this case. The issue of Ms. Moos's benefits is a question of law. There are no witnesses in this case that have or would become unavailable, and memories are not fading. The issue here is as clear as when Ms. Moose received this amended determination. This is also a unique case. This court has addressed a number of cases dealing with the appeal deadline, but none like this. Not only did Ms. Moose not receive the February amended determination in the mail, it didn't appear in her web account. Additionally, there was a January determination that neither Ms. Moose nor the ULJ was aware of until Deed made it a part of the record in this appeal. Ms. Moose received that further amended determination in April, which she has timely appealed. However, Deed has not scheduled a hearing as to the April amended determination, and Ms. Moose is not sure if Deed is ever going to schedule a hearing as to the April decision. It appears here that Deed is arguing that substantial compliance and strict compliance are the same thing. The purpose of Governor Walz's order was in contemplation of the world we are currently living in and the pandemic. Many systems due to the pandemic are not working as they normally would. For example, the post office. Ms. Moose received the amended determination of her benefits in April of this year. To date, Deed has not scheduled a hearing, even though Ms. Moose has timely appealed this April decision. If there are no further questions from the court, Ms. Moose respectfully requests this court order a hearing on the merits.
Ms. Seavey, I had a follow-up question. Your point between strict compliance, which is generally the rule with respect to Deed cases, is different than substantial compliance, which is consistent with our ruling in Ray Murak and interpreting the governor's order. But I just want to follow on the question that Chief Judge Siegel had in terms of the analysis here. I mean, isn't it really a two-part analysis? And isn't the first part whether the ULJ erred in determining in its determination and its findings? And if we conclude that that the ULJ erred, do we even need to get to the substantial compliance issue?
I believe so, because there was substantial compliance in this case.
Well, let me rephrase it. Let's assume for the sake of argument that we agreed with you that the ULJ erred in its finding sufficient evidence that the Deed actually did send it out. In other words, we agree with your argument. Let's assume for the sake of argument that we agree with your position that she never received it. And because she never received it, all she had to do was substantially comply. There is no need for strict compliance. In fact, there's no need for compliance at all if she never received it or had never been notified of it. If we agreed with you there, do we even need to get into the substantial compliance issue, or would our inquiry just end right there and we would need to reverse and remand?
Reverse and remand, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else from the panel this morning?
No, Your Honor.
All right, thank you, Ms. Seavey. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. Ms. Phillips.
All right. Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Carrie Phillips, and I represent the Respondent Department of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED for short. So as counsel noted, in Murak, the court held that the governor's executive order suspended strict compliance with the appeal period, but it stated that it did not suspend all compliance. And then the court provided a test for substantial compliance. And that test requires, among other things, that the party has taken steps to comply with the statute. And then after Murak, the court has issued some non-precedential decisions. And in all of those decisions, The court has determined that the relator does not meet the criteria for substantial compliance when they did not identify any steps that they took to comply with the statute during the appeal period. Relator argues that she should not be required to show that she took steps to comply within that statutory period in order to show substantial compliance. We would argue that you can't take steps to comply with the appeal period after the appeal period has passed. That makes that step meaningless, because any late appeal would then be a step to comply.
So Ms. Phillips, I mean, before we even get to the question of what Ms. Moose did after she learned of the determination, I think that we need to evaluate whether Deed complied with its own obligations. And I'm very concerned about the ULJ's finding that it's more likely than not that Deed mailed the letter, because I'm not seeing any evidence in the record that supports that conclusion. When I look at Mr. Cloutier's affidavit, I only see an attestation that there were no issues with printing and inserting. I don't see any evidence that there may not have been any other problems. For example, human error, personnel issues, staffing issues, issues that may have interfered with Deed's regular processes due to the COVID-19 pandemic. So I'm troubled by that conclusion in the record, from this record. Do you want to address that?
Okay. The evidence in this record that it was mailed includes a copy of the determination that has the date on it, and it has the relator's address that it was mailed to. And then we do have the affidavit that you've noted that describes Deed's business processes. So Deed does follow a business process for mailing determinations on the date that the determinations state. That is the evidence that Deed has provided in late appeal cases to show that Deed mailed it. Of course, if the court determines that that is not substantial evidence to support that finding, it could remand and a ULJ could have a hearing and take testimony from Deed employees to talk about those concerns that you have. But for late appeals, that's the evidence that Deed has always provided, is that it follows its business processes and that those business processes result in determinations getting mailed out on the date stated and to the address stated on the determination.
I mean, if the affidavit actually said that, that would be one thing. But the affidavit doesn't say that it actually mailed the document. It just says there were no issues in the printing and inserting operations disrupting the timely departure of mail. It's possible, correct, counsel, that there could be other disruptions, other types of disruptions.
Yes, it's possible. It's possible. It does describe, the business process of mailing determinations and how that works.
So what do we make of the fact that there was maybe some disruption to some process because the determination was not uploaded to Ms. Moose's online portal? I mean, that does seem like there's some evidence that something's going on that's not part of the normal Deed process.
And the ULJ didn't make a finding about whether or not it showed up on her online portal. And so that is something that if the court wants to remand, that can be developed in the record as to whether or not that happened. The ULJ, I can assume, did not make that finding because under the statute, the appeal period is triggered by mailing of the determination. It's not triggered by showing up on the online account. And so legally, the ULJ is saying we fulfilled our duty because we mailed this determination on the date stated to the last known address provided by the relator. And that's what's required under the statute to begin that appeal period. So the showing up in the account is a type of actual notice, but but the law is well settled that actual notice is not required for the appeal period to run. And we understand that it's a different standard now. It's substantial compliance. It's not strict compliance, but there's nothing that the court has stated in Murak or any other substantial compliance case that states that it changes that well-settled rule that actual notice is not required. So Relator is asking the court to do something more than find substantial compliance. Relator is asking for the court to find perhaps a good cause exception. And that's not what substantial compliance is. You still need to take those steps during the appeal period, and actual notice is not required. To the point of actual notice, Adid did kind of describe in the brief ways that the relator may have had actual notice or perhaps should have had actual notice. There was, you know, her benefit amount was initially reduced the week of January 3rd. So she was receiving this, you know, substantially lower amount for almost 3 months when she appealed. So,
but counsel, is that what triggers the need for somebody to appeal? I mean, I thought it was a mailing. So why would the ULJ rely on that then?
Well, you're correct, and the ULJ didn't note that. You know, we just noted that in the brief, as far as looking at substantial compliance and whether, you know, what happened here, whether she has a reasonable explanation for failing to strictly comply. So the ULJ did not take note of that. But
strict compliance is not required though. It's substantial compliance at this stage.
Right. And I'm talking about the test for substantial compliance, which requires one of the factors is a reasonable explanation for failing to strictly comply. So that's why we brought that up in the brief. But you're correct. Actual notice is not required, and I'm not arguing that it is required. I'm just saying, as far as actual notice goes, this had started in early January. So even if she didn't get that first determination, even if she didn't get that second determination in February, she was getting this lower benefit amount.
I want to go back and focus on the finding by the ULJ that proper notice had been provided. There are a number of facts here that would seem to indicate that mailing may not have been properly sent out. I mean, this is during the pandemic. There are a lot of disruptions in terms of what's going on, people working remotely, et cetera, et cetera. But it seems that affidavit is lacking in specificity as to whether or not her letter had actually been sent out. It seems rather vague, as Judge Frisch had pointed out. But I'm also a little concerned about this January 15th, 2021 letter from Deed. It appears that Relator did not even know about it until the brief had, Deed's brief had been filed. And it appears that the ULJ itself didn't even know about the January 15th letter. Can you provide some context as to, did that get mailed out, or was that something else that did not get mailed out and people didn't find out until the briefs were filed here?
Sure. And again, we don't have a developed record here. So, you know, the ULJ didn't bring this up. We believe it was mailed out. We don't know if the relator received it or not. You know, this is all kind of outside the scope of what the ULJ determined. I mean, I believe the ULJ did know about it because it's part of the same issue. I mean, the February determination amended the January determination, and they essentially held the same thing. The January determination is the one that initially reduced her benefit amount. Again, if the court is concerned about this issue of actual notice, when did she first know? This is something that can be addressed in a hearing on a remand. You know, we don't really have that evidence. Deed's position is, you know, we don't need to remand because, as the record is now, Relator does not meet that test for substantial compliance. The February determination, you know, there is a finding that that was mailed out. It's supported by substantial evidence in the record. And the relator is not alleging that she took any steps within that appeal period to file an appeal. The law is well settled that that's, you know, actual notice is not required. So we don't believe a remand is necessary. But if the court is concerned about this issue of actual notice, when did she first know? Did she get the January determination? Then that is something that can be developed more with fact finding.
So I have a follow-up question. And I mean, we just have a lot of facts here that are disconcerting, whether she actually did receive it by mail from the February letter, it not being up on the portal for the February letter, whether she received the January letter, and then which one starts the clock? I mean, if the January letter is only coming up now, was that the one that was supposed to start the clock? And certainly she did not comply with that, but apparently she didn't know anything about that. She alleges she didn't know anything about the February letter. Is that the one that starts the clock? But then we have this April 27th, 2021 letter, amended determination. Did that start the clock again? Because I think the record is undisputed that she did comply with that one. And that was April of this year. It's now December. And why hasn't anything happened with that? It just, it seems, I'm not sure what to make of which one. Did the January one start the clock, and then February, when it's amended, reset the clock? And then if that's the case, does the April one reset the clock again?
Okay.
So what role does this April 27th amended determination play in this whole process?
Okay. I'll just answer your last question first, the April determination. She did file a timely appeal of the April determination, and she is entitled to a hearing on that determination. All I can say about why that hasn't happened yet is that that is an error. And so, you know, I have talked to staff, and that is going to happen. As far as the January determination, that one did become final. In February, there was an amended determination. That's the one at issue here. The February determination backdated her account a week, but it kept the same amounts. The April determination is an extension. It extended her her benefits, so it covers a different time period. Oh. And we believe that she did have a timely appeal of that determination.
So question is, when her benefits were reduced pursuant to the January notice, can she raise that as part of the April notice appeal? Or is that water over the dam and the only thing she can appeal is the change between the February and the April determinations, which I guess is time period or something you said?
Yeah, and that's something, the scope of that appeal is something that the ULJ will look at. I know looking at the April determination, it states a time period, a discrete time period of the extension. So that is a legal question that the ULJ will look at as far as what is my scope of appeal here? How far back am I going to look at this appeal? So I'm not sure what the ULJ will decide to do as far as the scope of that appeal. I do see my time is up. I'm happy to answer any other questions a court may have. Otherwise, we request that the court affirm the ULJ's dismissal because the relator did not show substantial compliance. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Phillips. Ms. Seavey, you'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it.
Unless the court has questions, no rebuttal, Your Honor.
Anything from the panel? All right. Thank you, counsel. The matter is submitted. We appreciate your submissions in this matter.